Chaka Khan, Chaka Khan, Chaka Khan.
Chocolate
muffin. Jeez, your mum's muffin.
Let's not get back into this. Let's you know, we've had a bit of a break.
Yeah.
So let's
your mum hasn't.
Right. Okay. One can of Kronenbourg. Not even that.
Right,
half
pound
a can.
Yes.
You. What? Oh, did that go down the wrong hole?
Oh. Hey. No such thing as the wrong hole. She'll tell you that herself.
Oh, right. Okay.
What? Okie cokie.
Arsehole.
Too easy. Too easy.
Oh, it's the title of your sex tape.
Arsehole too easy.
Arsehole too easy.
And welcome to Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure!
Yeah!
We're back!
We're back, yes, we're back. Again.
Yeah.
My name's Matt.
And my name is Darren.
This week we are looking at...
The Abyss. Ooh, spooky dookies.
Spooky dookie rookie.
Yeah, well, quite.
Yeah.
Yes, 1989, The Abyss. We've had a nice summer break. Have you had a nice summer break?
Mm, it's been hot though, isn't it?
Oh, bastard hot. Honestly, what was the phrase I saw the other day? I am hotter than a crackhead spoon on gyro date.
Oh, my God.
I love that. I thought it was fucking brilliant.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if that's appropriate or not, but fuck
but
it.
But, yeah, it was. It was hot. I mean, we were in Mallorca. I mean, just mentioning.
You've been back, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah. Mallorca was good. It was hot, but they could deal with it. We can't deal with it here.
It's a different kind of heat.
It's a different kind of heat. But also at night time, you've got air-conned rooms over here.
Fuck all.
I was getting up every 10 minutes, having a shower, and then stood in front of the fan. Not like a fan of the show.
We couldn't get rid of him. He's just wafting away.
Wafting away.
Yeah. But have you had a nice summer?
Yeah, it's been a cracking summer. In fact, at the time we're recording this a bit early. We've still got some stuff to do.
We have. Actually, at the time, fuck it, we might as well be honest. We've just won the fucking Euros. It's coming.
Have we?
Oh, for fuck's sake, Matt. Yes, today the ladies won the Euros.
Oh, nice.
Come on, you must have known that.
No, I genuinely didn't.
Seriously, you not followed the football at all?
No.
Unbelievable. It's good though, because you know that fucking ironing has been mounting up.
Oh, Darren.
Oh, you know, I'm only joking, Matt.
Yeah, no, cracking summer. I mean, there's still some stuff to come. We've got a little known 80s festival.
Where will we be in 3 weeks' time?
Yeah, little known 80s festival.
Lovely old job.
Oh,
can't wait.
I can feel the hangover already.
Mm-hmm.
Who have we got this year at Rewind?
Oh, fucking hell, put me on the spot. Holly Johnson, Human League.
Chesney.
Chesney, Misha Paris, the Thompson Twins. I can't remember.
I mean, it's going to be good, right?
Of course it's going to be. It's going to be fucking amazing, as always.
We've gone full on with our dressing up this year.
Yes, we have. Oh, I need to show you some stuff I've ordered as well.
Ooh. Anyway,
sorry, just talk amongst yourselves for a minute. Yes, so here we are talking about The Abyss. We're going back to 1989. So should we crack on?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's have some facts then.
All right, Darren, here are some things about 1989. So in the cinema that week, in the US charts, number 5 was When Harry Met Sally, a film we have covered.
We have, yeah.
Number 4 was Turner and Hooch.
We haven't covered that one yet.
We haven't.
I remember that, yeah.
Tom Hanks, though. I love Tom Hanks.
Good old Tommy Hanks.
No. What? How can you make that sound dirty?
Where are you going to go for a Tommy Hanks?
Where you been? Just been for Tom Hanks?
Nice. Right,
okay.
Nice.
Number 3 was Nightmare on Elm Street, The Dream Child. That's the third one, right?
Dream Child, I think, is number 4.
Have we had requests for that?
No, we had a request for Halloween 3.
Okay.
Yeah, which I think we should do. We'll do that.
Number 2,
mm-hmm.
The Abyss.
Okay.
And number 1 is Parenthood.
Still not seen it, I don't think.
I don't think I have.
Mm. Is that Steve Martin?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. I think so. But I think The Abyss was one of James Cameron's only films not to open at number 1.
Right.
Okay. So there we are. In the UK,
yeah,
we had at number 5 The Land Before Time.
Oh, the animated dinosaur thing.
Yes.
I remember that.
I've never seen it, though.
I don't think I have seen it, but I remember it.
It seems to be the thing of like trilogy. So the third one, number 4 is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Nice. Good film. I remember.
Number 3 is Karate Kid 3. Oh, okay. 2, License to Kill.
Okay.
And yeah. Number 1, we have covered this one, and it's Batman. Go back a few episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, talking of which, go back a few episodes if you haven't listened to them. If we've got any new listeners, nice to hear from you. Sorry, I just jumped in.
No, so you go for it. You go. So, at time of recording, this week we lost an absolute legend. We lost Bernard Cribbins.
Oh.
I mean, what a legend. Was he 93 years old?
Yeah, 93. And David Warner as well we lost.
Goodness me.
Fucking hell, what are we?
I mean, I looked at a few of the people that we lost in the year of 1989.
Okay, we'll keep it light, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I thought you might say that. No, I can't see his name very well. John Matuszak.
Okay.
And he was in The Goonies.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So, so we lost Olivier that year.
Olivier who?
Laurence Olivier.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, we lost Lucille Ball. So, I mean, this, 1989, I was looking through this. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah. But I will turn things around and try and keep it a little bit lighter.
Okay.
So, I don't know what it is. When I was a kid, he was everywhere. Nigel Mansell, he won the Brazilian Grand Prix.
Mr. Moustache.
Yes, he was everywhere, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a bit of a sporting hero for lots of people.
He was. I mean, do we get sporting hero drivers nowadays, I guess? I guess you do.
Lewis Hamilton and all the other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
What? We're all really good sports fans.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're telling me you don't watch the car racing, Darryl?
I have not seen the car racing for a while.
In 1989, an asteroid about half a mile across whizzed past Earth, missing us by 400,000 miles. Now, if it struck, the force would have been the equivalent of 20 billion tons of TNT being set off.
Wow.
That's crazy, isn't it?
That must be like when that Gemma Collins fell through the stage. No?
Yes. Oh, dear.
Rude.
How rude indeed. And you've been to Paris. Have you been to the Louvre?
Several times. Several times. I did go to Paris for Say Sportive, and we went to the Louvre. Fuck me, it's dull.
Well, now, so the iconic glass pyramid wasn't added until 1989.
Oh, okay.
So there we are. That's something else that happened in 1989. So those are some of the facts that I managed to glean from that year. Gemma Collins falling through the stage. If you haven't seen that, look it up on YouTube.
Genius. Or when she falls over on the ice.
Just Gemma Collins falling over, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so how about we move on to the charts?
The Abyss had its premiere in New York City on the 8th of August 1989 and went on general release in the USA on the 9th of August 1989. And so this week we are looking at the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 6th of August 1989. At number 10 this week, falling one place from last week's number 9, it's Chaka Khan and Ain't Nobody 89. Rising a massive 18 places from last week's 27 to this week's number 9, it's Martika and Toy Soldiers. At number 8, falling from last week's number 7, it's Bobby Brown and On Our Own. It's another faller at number 7, it's Bross, falling from last week's number 4 with Too Much. It's a non-mover at number 6 for Gloria Estefan and Don't Wanna Lose You. Into the top 5, at 5, up from last week's 13, it's Alice Cooper and Poison. Falling one place from last week's number 3 to this week's number 4, it's Sonia and You'll Never Stop Me From Loving You. And up from last week's number 5 to this week's number 3, it's Lil Louie and French Kiss. This week's number 2 is last week's number 2, it's Kylie Minogue and Wouldn't Change Your Thing. Which means it's another non-mover at number 1. It's Jive Bunny and Swing the Moon. And that was the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 6th of August, 1989.
Okay.
That's all right, isn't it?
It's interesting. When you said Jive Bunny, I was like, oh, it's going to be the Master Mix or whatever else.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is the Master Mix.
That's what the Master Mix is called.
Yeah,
then?
The very first one, yeah.
Right.
Well, I think that's the one, anyway. I would assume that's, yeah, Swing the Mood, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I just remember that being, Jive Bunny being fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
For months.
He's on an island now, sipping Mai Tais and he's just retired.
He's in a pie somewhere.
What? He's in a Frey Bentos, is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah, swing that mood, you cunt.
First episode back in a while and you dropped the C-bomb.
We're 6 minutes in and I dropped the C. Sorry. Sorry, listener. apparently he's from Ashburton, which isn't very far from us.
No, it's not.
Yeah, for anyone that knows or that doesn't know. I don't know. Anyway, so yes, Martika. I like a bit of Martika.
Yeah. I'm keen on all the curries.
Gloria Estefan. I like a bit of Gloria Estefan.
Martika. Who is Martika?
Toy Soldiers. Step by step. Martika's Kitchen and all that.
Oh, yeah. Nice. So she did a Saturday morning show with cooking.
I just think it set the women's lib movement back 20 years.
I mean, this has been an episode. I mean, we've talked about the football and you said about ironing. And now we've said about,
women in the kitchen.
Oh, dear.
We're only joking. Anyway, just outside the top 10, we've got actually a song from a film at number 11, Bette Midler and Wind Beneath My Wings.
Mm-hmm.
One of your favourites at number 12, The London Boys and London Nights.
I do like the London Boys. Do you not like the London Boys?
I think they're all right. I think they were all right.
They were, right. Bless them.
Yeah, lost them way too early. Shakespeare's Sister at 13 with your history. No, I love Shakespeare's Sister. They did, yeah. Transvision Vamp.
Can I just quickly on Shakespeare's Sister?
Yeah. I'd love to quickly on Shakespeare's Sister.
But Shakespeare's Sister, I mean, were they in, wasn't one of them in another band or something like that?
Yes. And now her name has gone right out. Siobhan Fahey was in Bananarama.
Yeah.
In the original.
Yes. When we do watch music videos on a Sunday night, some of this information does stick in.
I think Marcella Detroit was...
does stick in. Some of this information does stick in.
Dirty bitch. Yes. Anyway, Transvision Vamp, Wendy James, at 14 with Lancelot of Love. Kirsty MacColl at 15 with Days. Lightning Seeds at 16 with Pure. Soul to Soul, Back to Life at 19. Simply Red, A New Flame at 21. Liza Minnelli, Losing My Mind at 24. Big Fun at 25.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Blame It on the Boogie. So, basically, this is pretty much at the height of Stock Aitken and Waterman destroying pop music.
It really is.
Yeah.
You say destroying as well, but there's still some good memories.
Fucking wank. Pile of shit. Dogs Tomorrow Sound Like Kid at 26. Black Box, Ride on Time at 28.
Oh, that's great.
Blow Monkey's Choice at 30. Oh, here you go. Prince, Bat Dance at 31. Gladys Knight, License to Kill at 32.
Yeah, you see, it's because I think we got License to Kill in July, maybe. So it's not far afterwards, is it?
Yeah. At 35, Beatmasters featuring Betty Boo. Hey, DJ, I Can't Dance the Music You're Playing. I love a bit of Betty Boo. 37, Lisa.
Hang on, Betty Boo or Betty Boop, right? Which one's which?
Betty Boop is the cartoon character.
Right.
Betty Boo is the singer.
Oh, I loved Betty Boo.
Yeah, me too.
Doing the do.
Wouldn't mind having to go on Betty Boop either, but that's a different story. Lisa Stansfield at 37, This Is the Right Time. Fuzzbox at 38 with Self. I knew you were going to laugh. 39, Nanny Cherry, Kisses on the Window. Pet Shop Boys at 40 with It's All Right. That's not a bad chart at all.
It's a good week. I mean, I was 11.
I was only...
20.
Shut up. 14 going on 15. Cheeky bastard. Anyway, that's the chart for the week. I meant to sing. 6th of August, 1989.
Excellent. Good chart. Now, I suppose it might be time for the challenge. Darren's challenge. So, regular listeners will know that Darren has a challenge every week to link last week's film to this week's film. So, in a certain number of steps. So, we call it Darren's 5-step challenge, don't we? So, how many steps do we have to get from last week? So, we've got one step.
You say last week's.
Last episode.
Before the summer's episode, yeah.
So, you have one step to get from last episode, which was...
E.T.
To this week's episode, which is...
The Abyss.
Can it be done?
Let's find out. Okay, as Matt said, last week's episode was E.T. And one of the stars of E.T. was Henry Thomas. And so that's where we're going to start. Step one. Henry Thomas was in Riders of the Purple Sage with Ed Harris. And that's the one-step challenge.
Okay.
It was that simple.
Wow.
Yeah. Normally, I have to go around the houses and look at directors or musos. Yeah, we've done musos before, haven't we? But this was nice and easy. Just do a little... Okay. Oh. They're both in the same film. Fantastic.
What's it called?
Riders of the Purple Sage.
What the heck is that about?
I don't know, but it sounds a bit porny to me.
It does, doesn't it?
Come on, baby, ride my purple sage. But there we go.
That's great. Well, you completed your 5-step challenge.
Which means next week I get 5 steps.
Yeah,
you do. Very much.
Right.
Right then, so initial reactions to 1989's The Abyss.
Well, yeah, as it's an even number, why don't you go first? See what you thought.
Oh, yeah, it's 66. Clickety click. It's a strange, strange film. That's all I can say. I'm not sure what it's trying to be. There were bits I absolutely adored and bits I absolutely hated. So my initial reaction is it's a good tense thriller in places.
Oh my God, is it tense?
And then it loses its way a bit and gets a bit weird. It's wonderfully made most of the time. Very well acted most of the time. And I enjoyed it on the whole. So that's my initial reaction.
Okay.
Yourself?
My initial reaction is, I think I had a different idea of what this film was going to be. I remember the alien-y bits.
Right.
I remember it's set underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember a lot else apart from that. So going in, it was fairly new to me. It's no secret. I've got a bit of a, I love James Cameron's work and I still do. This was a solid film, but it wasn't what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the edge of my seat. A lot. Right. So, as you said, when it's quite a tense thing,
I was like,
oh my God. Yeah, again, not without its faults, but I did enjoy. I did enjoy.
Great.
It's a bit long.
Isn't it?
It's a little bit, I think it's a little bit too long, in my opinion, but, mm-hmm. I know in your opinion.
It's definitely over 90 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah, anything over an hour and a half is just a waste, right?
Indulgent.
But after watching this, I would be interested to go and see the director's cut. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, I believe there's never been a Blu-ray.
No, he keeps talking about, he's working on an HD transfer, yada, yada, yada. It just needs to be signed off. But it hasn't happened yet.
No. But I did enjoy. Did very much.
Well, there we go. That's our initial reaction, listener. So stick around. We're going to have a short break now, I guess.
Yeah, let's...
And then we'll come back and...
go deeper.
Deeper into the abyss. I don't know why I'm doing that.
So listeners come up and like me, oh, you're Darren.
And we're back.
Part two of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure, where this week we are looking at The Abyss. Mm. I don't know why we're doing it. It's such a spooky.
Deeper underwater.
Diddly-loo.
Diddly-loo. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, long-term listeners to the PCast will know that at this point in said PCast, Matt has a challenge to give us the synopsis of the film, and he has as many seconds as the film has minutes. So, should we just say you've done it? Because it's fucking long.
I mean, it's two hours, 20 minutes.
Two hours, 20 minutes. So that's what, 140 minutes? Is that right?
140, what? Yes, yes.
So you have 2 minutes, 20 seconds. Fucking hell. To give us the synopsis of the film. Are you ready?
I am.
Then let's have the jingle. And if you're still ready, go.
An American sub crashes because of a near miss with underwater aliens. The closest vessel is a privately owned experimental drilling rig whose foreman, Virgil Bud Brigman, played by a ruggedly handsome Ed Harris, is conducting some underwater tests, I assume. His estranged wife, Lindsay, who's also designed the rig, is reluctantly brought in by the US Navy to oversee an operation with some Navy SEALs, and you can tell that they're Navy SEALs because they have it written on their hats. The SEALs are led by Lieutenant Coffey, who, apart from being a first-class dick, is also suffering with high-pressure nervous syndrome from being so deep. Wahey! The crew is now set about investigating the sub, and while they're down there, Jammer sees a glowing light and freaks out, and they get him back to the underwater rig, and he is in a coma. Dick-faced Coffey and his team take the mini-sub to get a warhead, but the timing couldn't be worse, as it's the only vehicle capable of detaching the rig from its surface ship, and this needs to happen as the mother of all storms is happening up top. The crane breaks off and narrowly misses the rig, but then falls into the nearby trench and starts dragging the rig. A whole mess kicks off, but they manage to save the rig, unfortunately with some losses. The crew find out that Coffee has a bomb on board, and Lindsay, dressed as Marty McFly, confronts the SEALs. Lindsay goes to fix part of the rig and sees the aliens, but no one believes her until they're getting some shut eye and the alien makes contact in the form of a tentacle made of water. This freaks out the already paranoid Coffee, who scares the life form away. He now decides he wants to blow them up. Coffee takes control of the rig, but Jammer has conveniently woken up from his coma and helps the crew take back the rig. Coffee escapes, pursued by Bud and Lindsay. They stop Coffee, but the bomb goes down into the trench regardless. Bud and Lindsay are stuck in a sub with one diving suit, and Bud drags the hypothermic Lindsay back to the rig. He rips open her shirt, not for sexy time, but to save her life. Miraculously, she lives, and they have to disarm the bomb. Bud dons an experimental dive suit and heads down into the trench, and he manages to cut the wire and sends a touching message to Lindsay about knowing it was a one-way trip. Luckily, the aliens have seen this and rescue Bud, and then ascend to the surface, taking the rig with them. Bud and Lindsay meet on the top of the alien craft and have a passionate kiss as the film ends.
Okay. Right then. Well, that took a lot longer than I thought.
Yeah, I know, but there's a lot that happens, isn't
true,
there? So
true
that, I
true
didn't want to skip bits.
Stop doing that. Right, so just remind us, how long was the film?
2:20.
So you had 2 minutes 20 seconds. You did it in, drum roll, 2 minutes 11 seconds. Ooh, yeah, I thought for a minute, oh, fuck, he's going to go over. Yeah, but no, you didn't.
If I went over, I had the director's cut. I was like, well, hang on a second.
Well, and then this happened and that happened. And, yeah, well, there we go. That's the synopsis. Very, yeah, nice. Nice.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yes.
She was dressed as Marty McFly, by the way.
Was she?
I mean, she was double denim with a red puffer.
For a while.
For a while, yeah. And then he ripped over. Yes. Not for sexy time,
no,
though.
No, no.
To save her life. Now, that's
I
one of the scenes.
Did not pause it.
That's one of the scenes I heard about where she got pissed off with James Cameron.
She was not happy, was she?
Like, we're not animals or something like that, and walked off set because...
Before we get into that. Alternative castings?
Yes. So there were a few. So Jessica Lange, Deborah Winger.
Wiener?
Deborah Wiener.
Sorry, Debs.
Barbara Hershey and Kathleen Quinlan were all considered to play Lindsay.
Okay.
Now, the studio wanted either Mel Gibson, Dennis Quaid, William Hurt, Harrison Ford, Kurt Russell, Patrick Swayze, but James Cameron fought for Ed Harris, and they were kind of concerned about his experience as a leading man,
right,
apparently as well as his receding hairline. But, you know, he looks very rugged and manly and a very good-looking young Ed Harris,
yeah,
doesn't he?
Yeah, actually, it took me a little while to go, actually, oh yeah, fuck it, it's Ed Harris.
Yeah.
Because then, obviously, you know, there's no titles at the beginning, apart from just the card, basically the abyss. So yeah, it took me a little while to realise it was Ed Harris.
And to say that sentence.
No, fuck you.
So apparently though, James Cameron's two choices for Bud were Ed Harris and Jeff Bridges. So he wanted more of an everyman. I'm guessing this year he wanted more of a pretty boy.
Yeah.
So so there we are.
And what's his face supposed to be in one of the roles?
Lance Hendrickson.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently he was meant to be one of the SEALs. I think he was one of the team.
Right.
So
scheduling clashes, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah, I like Lance Hendrickson, though.
Yeah. Again, it's another one of James McAroon's company of actors, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And is that it?
I think so, yeah. I mean, that's all I've sort of gleaned.
Ideal, then. Well, let's rip this film to shreds. There's a lot to talk about, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't know what the film is trying to be. I think that's my main issue with it. The whole stuff down at Deep Core, and like you said earlier, the rig being dragged towards the open trench, and the crane crashing down. Fuck me, it's tense. All the stuff in
terrifying.
The sub.
Terrifying.
You know, the first scene in the sub is horrific. I mean, I've got my own issues with diving, as we talked about earlier, but that's not for here. And then the second scene in the sub, where they break in, basically, and go, oh, my God, it's just, like you said earlier, it's edge-of-the-seat stuff.
Yeah.
It's fucking horrendous. And it really punches you in the scares. It's not even a scare. It's terror. It's almost terror. If you're scared of drowning or anything like that, this film is not for you.
No.
I
mean,
it's horrendous.
Just from the very beginning, being in that sub and the water's starting to come in, you're like, fuck.
It just, yeah. It brings back so many, there have been so many stories over the years of the Kursk, I think, was about 10 years ago, the Russian sub. The same sort of thing happened there. Obviously not with fucking Camp Tinkerbell floating around everywhere.
Camp Tinkerbell, really?
Fucking hell. But that's for later. But yeah, I mean, that sort of thing plays with my mind and it felt really uncomfortable watching it.
Mm. Would you ever go on a sub?
No. Right. Not a fucking chance.
I think I would, but it would have to, not deep sea. Mm. I would go, if they said, we'll take you out a little way and just...
Oh, thanks. You keep that hatch open and I'll sit on the top, maybe. But no, I just couldn't do it. We're not meant to be down there.
No.
But then I guess we're not meant to be up there in the plane either. But so that stuff works so well.
Mm.
But the stuff with the aliens, I just think, was it actually necessary? Because without it, it's a great film.
So what your proposal would be to cut the alien stuff. And
just have a disaster movie underwater.
Mm. No, I see that. I mean, I personally like the alien stuff, but I think from what I understand, it ended up being a different film than the one James Cameron really wanted to make.
Yeah.
Again, I think that's the thing. Studios back in the day, in the 80s, were so perhaps restrictive on people like James Cameron.
Controlling.
And then when they make films like Titanic and Avatar, they kind of go, just do what you want. Have complete control.
I guess at that point they're scared that, he's got so much money in the bank, he can set up his own fucking company and do what the fuck he wants.
Well, yeah. And you can see elements of, because we are both Titanic fans, aren't we?
Absolutely.
And you can see elements of some of the the work.
There's a lot of his tropes. Mm-hmm. You can see the sowing of seeds that come along a lot in later James McAroon films.
And I think one of the inspirations of making this film was when the Titanic got discovered.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think it was around the same time. Mm. I think maybe the year before. Well, he had the idea, didn't he? Watching a lecture at college.
A film school or something?
About the breathing liquid. Yes. Liquid oxygen.
Oh, which we can get into in a bit.
And so that was the seed of an idea. But he wanted to make it about... Or the idea he came up with was a bunch of scientists underwater, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think quite rightly decided that people just wouldn't be able to identify with people. So that he changed it to what he terms as blue collar workers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just regular everyday Joes that people can identify with. And I think he was absolutely right to do that.
Completely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think it's very well cast, the film. Ed Harris is a good leading man.
Ed Harris is great. I'm not sure they all give great performances. I have to be honest.
Right. Okay.
Michael Biehn, for me, when he's on the edge, is a bit too, I don't want to say pantomime because that's really disingenuous, but he's a little bit over the top for me.
Right. Okay.
And not 100% convincing. Let's put it that way.
I mean, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I can't defend it. I was just going to go, well, maybe. Yeah. Maybe not.
But we know how great an actor he is. Anyway, we've had him in Aliens and Terminator, so we know he's good. Maybe it's to do with the fact that it wasn't, by all accounts, a happy set.
Was it not?
Was it not? No. Yeah, you didn't say anything about that? Fuck me. Yeah. I mean, there are troubles, and then there are, the abuse, I think, was one of the nicknames the film was given, wasn't it?
I mean, there was so many. I think there was... Because... Give Cameron his due, he does try and push the envelope when he does things like this. But I think in pushing the envelope, sometimes you're going to run into certain troubles and things that, procedures back then would never fly today.
No.
By all accounts, the cast and crew were exhausted. He was exhausted. The actors were exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I think this is apparently one of the films I've read that, bar Michael Ben Biehn, No, but no one has worked with him again from this film.
Yeah. And a lot of them didn't want to talk about the film either, did they?
No.
Ed Harris said he'd never talk about the film, never work with James Cameron again. Mary Mastrantonio, is that her name?
Yeah, Mary Elizabeth, yeah.
It said it was many things, but an enjoyable experience it was not.
They nicknamed it Son of Abyss.
Son of Abyss or The Abuse.
Life's Abyss and then you dive.
Yeah. Yeah, but it just sounds like a fucking dangerous set.
Yeah, I mean, Cameron himself got into trouble.
Yeah, but you know, at the end of the day, I remember I read about a lot of the cast complaining about being underwater for up to 10 hours at a time. Mm. And his comeback was, yeah, well, I was down there for 12 or 14 hours. Don't pretend that, you know, you're amazing because it was your idea, Pratt.
Yeah, so they had to Vaseline the actor's hair, didn't they? Just
all of the chlorine in the water was dyeing their hair, burning their skin. Mm. Ed Harris thought he was going to die.
Yeah. And did you read about the Cameron incident where he was filming someone underwater and something to do with his... He had to come up. He dropped his... He took his mask off, took his weights off. He got up. But stop and get in the bends, this instructor, whatever else, was trying to keep him underwater. Mm-hmm. And then gave him a breathing apparatus, which was full of water. So he inhaled water. Right. And he got up. He actually punched the guy.
I thought that was Ed Harris.
Apparently that was Cameron.
Oh, I read it as Ed Harris.
Oh, there's somebody, yeah.
But the bit where he was falling down into the abyss, right, because obviously you can't, the tank they were filming in wasn't big enough, so they basically tipped it all on its side, or the set on its side, and dragged him across, obviously holding his breath, or because he had the mask on filled with pink water.
Mm.
So he held his breath, and then when he got to a certain point, ripped the mask off. The guy who was supposed to bring in the spare mouthpiece for him got stuck in some wires, so just a random crew member, it might not be, but noticed that Ed Harris was basically in trouble, went over and took his own
I read that, out,
whacked it into it, but put it in upside down, so he's basically just breathing in water until his guy came over and but then when he got out,
he punched
Cameron.
Yeah, this sounds like a separate incident, because
right.
The Cameron thing, yeah, he punched the guy to get out of the water,
right.
And this one, it sounds like there was a lot of...
Yeah.
I mean, there was
near-death experience. Another guy, I can't remember which one it was, but when he took his breathing apparatus, he knocked his breathing apparatus out, and then the mask basically acted as a weight and dragged him down, and he couldn't get back up, one of the other actors. It just sounds too much. It's too dangerous.
Apparently, Ed Harris became one of the most proficient divers.
And never actually went into any open water. Yeah, fuck me. But did you see the set that they used?
I mean, I read about it. Mm. Yeah,
it's basically a half completed nuclear power station, yeah. And they used the main reactor core, I guess. 7.5 million liters or tons of water or something it held.
Jesus,
fucking huge, absolutely huge. Yeah, doesn't sound like fun at all.
No, it really doesn't. Mm. I mean, I'm guessing he learned a lot of lessons there for when he went on to make Titanic.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound...
Water is so
nice.
Unpredictable. And, you know, even in the controlled circumstance like that, it just sounds...
Well, hell. Michael Biehn tells a story of he was down in one of the sets and all the lights went out.
Yeah.
To the point where he couldn't see his hand in front of his face. I'm like, okay, how long is this going to be? Because I don't know how much air I've got left. I didn't think to check. I can't see anyone. No one can see me. Is this it? Oh, it just sounds horrendous.
It does sound horrible.
In my head, that's just... Yeah, it's freak out city for me.
Now, it was a high budget at the time, wasn't it? About 70 million.
Well, there are different stories about the budget.
Okay.
Officially, it's somewhere between 43 and 47 million.
Mm.
But I think the New York Times or something reported 70 million.
Yeah.
But it took back, it wouldn't have kept the studio happy, but respectably, it took 90 million in return worldwide. So it still made a profit, but just not a James Cameron. Profit.
When you think of, well, I mean, of course, adjusted for inflation and stuff, but 90 million worldwide, that doesn't sound like a lot when you think
about... But that's only box office.
But when you think about most films nowadays open to 90 to 125 million weekends.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there are a lot more screens now and the obviously inflated prices.
Exactly, exactly. And most budgets now are 200 million plus.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, without the marketing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, but I mean... I don't know. I get what you're saying. I do get what you're saying about, you know, it could be a good disaster film and stuff. Because, I was on the edge of my seat. I like the alien element of it. I think that gives it a little bit of a USP from normal disaster films.
But it doesn't really go anywhere. It doesn't explain why they're there, who they are. Are they even aliens?
Well,
It's just we don't know.
So I mean, let's talk about the elephant in the room, about the film he wanted to make, and then he showed it to a test audience and cut some of the bits. So do you know anything about this?
I know that there's something that the aliens, if they are aliens, caused mega tsunamis. The phrase
Hovering above cities and stuff.
Yeah,
and they stopped it because of the message of love. Exactly. Yeah. But they've been observing for so long, they were going to destroy or whatever else. Mm. And then because of this moment between Ed Harris and...
One text message, basically.
A text message. I love it. Lol, be right back.
Ruffle.
I probably will go and watch the other version. Just see, because the version I had on earlier, because I like to sometimes when I'm writing show notes have the film on again. It was the extended version, and there was a lot more character stuff with Ed Harris and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. Mary Masters. I don't know. I don't know if maybe the aliens had a more prominent role, and the studio got their fingers in, and we all know what happens with studios.
From what I read about the test screening, the effects weren't completed.
They weren't finished.
It was all basically storyboards. Put into the film. That's right, isn't it?
They were shonky effects or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I quite like the Hollywood ending where the aliens have saved the day. But it's also so pretty and it's so iconic, that scene where the tentacle comes in now and takes on the... That's a very iconic piece of cinema.
It's definitely, spread down the years, isn't it? Mm. And been used a lot.
And it's that piece of ILM magic there, that really holds up well today.
That's the first thing they ever did, really, wasn't it? I think they used 7 effects companies, including DreamWorks, I think. And it was the first thing that ILM did, and they designed a piece of software that created that.
I could be wrong, could be completely wrong, so some software engineer might tell me I'm wrong, but I think that was the first use of Adobe Photoshop.
I don't know where they used it, but I read that the film used Photoshop, a very early version of Photoshop.
Yeah.
The first time, yeah.
So, I mean, to create that, I mean, that was magical for me when I first saw it. I was like,
and it still stands up really well now.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that don't stand up well.
Yeah, again, I don't know why they went down the stop motion animation route in this. I didn't think it needed it, especially with, some of the miniatures are great. Some of the miniatures aren't so great. But the miniature subs and things, they work really well, especially with the projections inside to show the cast basically piloting the subs under the subs.
Yeah.
Underwater. They basically just put a screen in front of the glass bubble and projected a film of Mary Masters piloting it. So even though they're miniatures, they've still got somebody inside piloting. I think it works really well.
I do, but I just love laughing about the fact you're calling it like... Yeah, you and Mary Masters.
I ain't got time to spend all this there. Lol.
I mean, okay, so what are some highlights for you then?
Okay, my highlights. I have to say, the underwater photography and cinematography is superb. Even given all the bullshit or the horrendousness that the cast and crew had to go through to get it.
Yeah.
It does look phenomenal.
33 years on,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, I think it looks amazing. And it just works so well. Some of it is, they could do now. And it'd probably be better than a lot of things. I don't know. I just think the cinematography underwater, what he got or what his crew managed to get for him is amazing. Absolutely amazing. And it works so well. And he says that he didn't want to do what he later did with Titanic and just do miniatures in a smoke-filled set. And the fact that you can see them there with bubbles coming out and everything, it's amazing. It works so well. It stands up really well. And that was a definite highlight for me.
Okay.
Yourself? Your highlight?
First one is the aliens.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I mean, so I would say the first thing for me was I started watching this film, I was laid back on the couch, and by the time it was getting to the stuff with the storm and everything going tits up, I was sat up and I was leaning forward. I was like, fucking hell, this has got me on the edge of my seat, literally on the edge of my seat. So it was the dramatic tension that James Cameron can build with something like that. Yeah, there are points where it does lull a bit, but when something's going down, it's, I mean, it's fucking hell. So yeah, there's so many of those moments peppered throughout it. I mean, even though I knew it was going to happen, when, you know, I had this whole thing about when she's like, okay, I'm going to technically drown and you bring me back. And I'm like, don't do it. Don't do it. But I know what happens. And I even paused the film and did a bit of research. Like, is that even possible? You know, and there was a case of a woman in, she was hiking through something like the Himalayas or something, and her heart stopped. And the doctors brought her back 6 hours later because of the, I was like, he's very clever in the respect that he uses science fiction, but he'll also put little nuggets in there of realism, such as that water with the breathable oxygen with the rat. Sorry, I'm ranting. But it's, yeah, the tension. The tension for me was, it was just brilliant. And I'd forgotten, you know, how good a sitting on the edge of your seat thing like that can be.
Yeah. Well, that actually takes me to my second highlight, which was, it's actually a sequence. The sequence with the crane in the hurricane.
Yeah.
Falling. Even though they just seem to forget there's a guy sat inside the fucking crane, he doesn't get mentioned.
No. Poor Barry. He was there.
Yeah, Barry the crane man.
Used to have a cutaway to his family going, so what, Barry was...
Is Barry all right?
No, he didn't...
Who's Barry?
He didn't make it.
He drives the crane.
Yes, yeah, bad news about Barry, yeah.
Do you want to sit down? Anyway, yeah. fucking hell. That whole sequence with the crane going over, and then, the guy's up top speaking to the guys in deep core. The crane's on its fucking way down. And it's almost like time stands still. It's really cleverly done.
And they're looking up.
And then... Oh fuck! I can see it coming, and you can hear the sonar thing getting faster. And oh shit! Is it gonna hit? Is it gonna hit? And it doesn't hit, but then it slides over the edge of the trench, and you just see the umbilical, I suppose, is what you connected to deep core. You know, fuck! That whole sequence was just, I mean, the squeaky bum time, and then there's that.
Which led to that whole thing about one compartment getting flooded. He's like, no, cut the thing. And,
yeah.
And then he's running through and he's in then that predicament.
Exactly. Although I must say, when the guy cuts the cables, they do cut very cleanly and very easily. but yeah, that sequence I thought was phenomenal.
Yes, yeah. I guess my second highlight is... It's a bit wishy-washy, if I'm honest, but I mean, it's about the timelessness of what James Cameron tends to do in his films. So it's down to the precision. It's the a highlight for me is how good a James Cameron film could look 30 years on. It's kind of harkens to what you're saying about the cinematography, but just everything's got that sense of realism to it. I believe they were on, you know, a rig. God knows how far down. Was it 8 miles down or something? or was it 8 hours to get there?
Yeah.
And so he's got this... We discussed this when we talked about Aliens, that it's got this grounding somewhere.
Mm.
And for me, that's what makes me buy the story, is this film had it, again, in spades, where you kind of were grounded into this story because of the way he shoots it. I mean, like him or hate him, and, you know... I don't condone his work practices or whatever else, but he is a fucking good director. And so I've liked the tension, but A, the realism. The realism for me is, I believe this shit, you know. I had to Google.
A&A.
But I genuinely had to Google whether this liquid technology was available, because I thought, shit, yeah. I wonder if that actually is possible now, 30 years on.
Yeah. Well, it's possible then, which brings me to my first low light.
Right.
I just thought it was unforgivable, the cruelty and the mistreatment of the rats in this film, just for fucking entertainment. I thought it was disgusting.
Thought you might have a bit of a problem with that, yeah.
It really, really upset me and really offended me. Made me fucking angry.
Did you think it was an effect at first?
No, because I knew that there's no way you can recreate something that small as a an animatronic or something, and that lifelike. And I thought, God, they're not really fucking drowning animals just for fucking entertainment. And then I read up into the liquid stuff. But still, those animals were fucking suffering for entertainment.
And shitting themselves by the
look yeah, apparently they cut away after they first, you know, the animal thinks it's being fucking drowned. So, of course, it's going to fucking just release, purge everything. And it's just unforgivable. And I know, allegedly, all five animals survived.
Mm-hmm.
One of them went into cardiac arrest.
Right.
Allegedly. And James Curran allegedly brought it back to life and then kept it as a pet. But, you know.
Did he do it like the sequence with Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio?
I don't know.
Live, you bastard, live! But and it, slap it across
maybe,
the face.
Maybe, but it really fucking pissed me off. You know, the actors, yeah, they're going through shit. But they're being paid for it, and they had the choice to do it or not.
Yeah.
These animals have just been stuck underwater. They have no idea what the fuck is going on. And you can see the distress. And it's just, it's for me, it was unforgivable. Absolutely fucking unforgivable. That might sound a bit pussy. I don't care.
No, listen, mate. It's, you're a big animal advocate. I get that.
Yeah, it was unnecessary. Yeah, if it's great, if it's fine, blah, 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 you know, and the animals survive, then, you know, grab someone's kid and do it with the kid. See what the fucking reaction is then.
I'm really glad I didn't put that as one of my highlights.
Oh, I mean, that'll be, that's it. End of the fucking podcast. But no,
I understand.
Really, I just didn't like it. Really didn't like it. Pissed me off.
Okay.
That's my first low light. Sorry.
No, not at all. Don't apologise for an opinion, man. That's perfectly valid. My first letter, I guess, is going to have to be a bit of the... there just seems to be some weird pacing issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is, because I could be thoroughly invested 1 minute, and then 2 minutes later, I'm like, all right. And then I'd get invested again. But there was something about the pacing of it or the editing. I don't know what it was. And that film... normally, James Cameron, or Macaroon as you call him, keeps me engaged all the way through and I'm there. But I found myself checking out a couple of times and going, well, hang on, I've got to do this. So,
funny enough, that's one of the notes I've got as well. The first 5 minutes or so with the sub and everything, amazing, brilliant. Oh, this is going to be a roller coaster ride. And then it's just sort of almost grinds to a halt for a while. And it's not, it's sort of in the same way that, you know, the old lady arrives on the boat in Titanic, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But then it gets going again. Whereas this doesn't, it's almost half an hour of setup and blah, 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 blah. And then it gets going again. It's like, fucking get on with it. No wonder it's 2 hours, 20 minutes long. Jesus. I agree. Okay, my second low light, the stupid ending. I hated it. I fucking hated it with a passion. It builds up to this great thing where, you know, he falls down into the trench. I mean, the whole cutting of the wire thing was too simple anyway.
I was like, he took a real fucking gamble there,
though. Of course, yeah. But at the end of the day, why were they bothering anyway? Yeah, these aliens didn't give a fuck about the sub that they just caused to fucking crash and
because it would have killed them as well. They said that they would be caught up in the shockwave. Yeah.
But they were going to die anyway.
Yeah.
Well, there was no way they were going to get out of deep core. With, you know, that far down with a hurricane, which just fucking disappears, by the way.
Well, yeah, because of the aliens controlling it.
Do they control the weather?
Yeah, well,
that's not said in the film.
I'm guessing they controlled the storm.
I guess lots of things, but it's not stated. That's the problem.
Right.
I'm just saying. It's all part of this whole... It's a massive cop-out. And as I say, up until that point, when, you know, he falls down...
Did you say massive cock-out?
I wouldn't know anything about that. Trust me, I really wouldn't. But you know, he falls down into the trench and cuts the wire. And you think, that's it. He sacrificed himself. Amazing. Brilliant. Mm. And then he hasn't. And it just, it's like the film takes a massive fucking left turn. And some of the effects are dreadful. When the camp ship comes up through the fucking sea and they're on it. Oh, God, it doesn't look good.
That doesn't hold
up. It really doesn't look good. As I say, the hurricane, which is like the mother of all fucking hurricanes, just dissipates and disappears. And what actually is the alien's motivation? I said before, they're fucking mincing around in the water like a camp Tinkerbell. But what are they for? It's never explained. I don't have a problem with things not being explained. If the, you know, if it's if E.T., why they're there, it's never really explained. But this was just, I just thought it was, like, maybe it's the alien thing I thought was unnecessary. I would have just liked him to, for want of a better phrase, I would have liked him to die, to have sacrificed himself. And then maybe, I don't know, maybe then the aliens realised that they were wrong, or I don't know. I just didn't like the ending.
Interesting. Interesting, because my second low light is about the ending, but right, for different reasons.
Okay.
My reasoning is, I had no problem with him being saved or whatever else. I just wanted more explanation.
Mm.
That's my only thing. I guess. But yeah, they reunite on the sub and they've managed to fall in love again. But
how?
I don't know. I just wanted more explanation about what the fuck are they doing there or what happens to the world.
But again, it's also just given them two, it's a complete fucking about face for their characters. They hate each other. I think
there's lots of stuff cut. I really do.
Yeah.
I mean, half an hour of Ed Harris falling's been cut.
Well, yeah, just to get down there. Fucking hell.
And just on a side note, another little niggle I've got is to do with, there's a lot of characters, but not a lot of them are fleshed out. I mean, you get a handful that, you know, have got character traits or whatever else, but none you really give a shit
and
about.
It's all quite forced as well, isn't it? Oh, let's give them that trait. Some of the dialogue is so clunky and awful as well.
But it's you don't, like when this guy was getting freaked out and then went to a coma, I don't know, I just know he's the tall one, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, the guy with the rat. Okay, yeah, that's fine. And then, yeah, but we didn't really get to know them.
Yeah, it's almost film school naivety characterization, isn't it?
I mean, you had a handful that were fleshed out to a degree, but even the other seals or whatever, it's like, I couldn't tell you the fuck they
exactly
are.
Exactly. And like I say, he's so over the top at points. It's just, yeah, I don't know. It just, maybe it needed another rewrite.
Maybe.
Yeah, another pass. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what, how about, are you pretty much done on your notes for this?
I am, yes.
I know we've gone on a bit of a rant on this, but that's the point of it. Right?
Yeah.
Well, why don't we maybe take a little break?
Look at music?
Hmm?
Music?
Oh, fuckity doodle. I forgot we do that here now.
Yeah, to be honest.
Interesting, though. It was interesting, the fact it was Silvestri.
It was, yeah. And again, another person who refused to work with him ever again. I have to say, it's quite forgettable. I liked some of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very appropriate for some of the action in the... It's quite eerie in places, and it makes a nice chase here, James McAroon film without fucking clunking metallic things in the score. But as a score, I think it's quite forgettable for me, and I can't really say much more than that. There are a couple of songs in there from Linda Ronstadt and Selector, who were singing at Rewind in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's sort of that very much a background thing that doesn't really influence it just sort of underpins things rather than influences the emotion of what I was feeling when I was watching it.
I mean, when it started, it. I was like, oh, okay, because I know we shit a little bit on Silvestri's score for Overboard.
A nice choir thing going on as it opens.
So, I mean, did he not work with him again or something then?
Apparently he refused to work with him after the film as well.
So. Okay.
These are all things that are based on things that are read on the internet or found in documentaries, yada, yada, yada. So we can't judge their veracity for being real, blah, 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 blah.
I read that he was one of the only ones that did want to work with him. But then I could be completely wrong, but I've had a lot of beer.
And now we're on the WKD.
We really did go deeper into the abyss, didn't we?
We did. And in terms of Alan Silvestri, we will be looking at him in a lot more detail.
Oh, I love the man.
In about 22 episodes. Maybe.
Yeah, so join us in 2025 when we...
Fuck it, let's have that break now. I need to pee. And
And we're back! Part three of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure, where we have torn down the abyss in the last section.
Yeah, we have.
And in this section, we will have the quiz.
Oh, the quiz.
The quiz. And our final thoughts, I suppose.
I guess so. Yeah.
That made it sound like a sermon, didn't it?
Yes.
Here's our final thoughts for the day.
Here's our final thought. Yes.
With the Hovis theme going on.
Fucking hell. Where's that sun?
I don't know. I just want you to bring that into everyday life as well, walking down the street going, aye. Like, what are you doing, Darren?
It's because I'm so cultimultural.
Of course you are.
And fucking street, innit?
Right, so straight into the quiz then. I guess then. Like we used to have music here, but we've moved that section.
Time for the quiz. Time for the quiz! I've missed that.
Eyes down for a full house.
So, yes, as Matthew says, it's time for the quiz. And it's episode 66. Jumping ahead of myself. Hang on, put my glasses on. Yeah, it's episode 66. As it stands in this block of 10,
mm-hmm.
we've had five episodes so far.
Have we?
Yeah.
Right.
And the score stands at 4-1.
Seriously? I've done that badly in this section?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, because I assume it is that way.
It is and that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
Right, well, there we are. So as it's an
even-numbered episode, I get to ask the first question, which I really don't like.
Yeah, because it's about where do you gauge it?
Where do I pitch it? Let me just do... Oh, shit.
I mean, I haven't got that many questions, so I'm hoping we haven't got duplicates.
Okay.
I was on the edge of my seat, Darren. I couldn't write questions.
Okay, then. Question one for you. When the sub crashes, how far down is it?
It's definitely underwater.
Mm-hmm.
Like exactly? Or just
he does say, yeah. One of the seals says exactly where it is.
2.4 miles.
No, it's 2,000 feet down.
Okay. 2,000 feet. So what does that work out to in miles?
Miles, I guess. I don't know. A half mile, something like that, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Oh, yeah. Go on, then.
First question for you. What company do they work for?
It is BP. Benthic Petroleum?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
You're right.
Oh, the tension round.
I know. I thought I'd leave that one.
Nice. Okay. Question two mm-hmm. for you. How many warheads are there on the sub?
I'm going to go with two.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
192.
Are there?
Yeah.
I thought they were like trying to rescue two or something.
No, I think the intention was because I didn't quite get it.
192.
192 warheads. I think what
is
they
it
were
just made
to do,
out of warheads then?
Yeah, that's the thing that just doesn't explain well or come across well. You said about if they let that one explode off whatever it's called, it's going to affect them as well. But their intention seems to be to get one warhead, prime it, and blow up all the others. So they're going to get caught in that anyway.
Okay, 192.
192.
I expected.
Yeah.
I took a punt at two, thinking, "All right, that's all right." I didn't think I'd be 190 out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Again, another thing in this.
Fuck
script.
You, James Cameron. Okay.
It's 3-0 to me, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Oh. I know. All right. What is on Catfish's hat?
Ooh. I remember looking at this. And I went with the other hat. on Catfish's hat.
I mean, you're in a pretty safe position to take a punt, aren't you?
I know, but I'm trying to remember. Illinois. I can't remember.
Arkansas.
Ah, I knew it was a state. I knew it was a state.
Yeah, it was God a state. Yeah, very good.
Okay, 3-1.
3-1.
Jeez.
I'm just fucking...
Okay, question three for you. What is the rat's name?
Beanie.
3-2. There we go.
Just when I thought it was out. I think you'll get this. I think you get it's easy. No. Who's it? What's the name of the hurricane?
Frederick.
There we are.
Hey, ooh. There we go. Nice. Okay. Fuck me, that's 5-1 overall. Well, 4-2 in this round, which means overall in this group of 10, it's 5-1.
Ooh.
Oh, I love it when you're like this.
Yeah.
Wow.
192 warheads.
Whatever. Some other questions then?
Yeah, go on.
One of the ones I knew you'd get was the HPNS. What does it stand for?
I can't remember now.
Oh.
I said it in the synopsis, but yeah, I couldn't fucking tell you.
High pressure nervous syndrome. NTI, what does that stand for?
Nope.
Oh, non-terrestrial intelligence.
Oh, of course it is.
What's the name of the sub?
It was the... Nope.
USS Montana.
Yeah.
How many men are on it?
20?
Fucking hell, did you watch the film? 156. What's on Bud's cap?
New York Yankees.
New Yankees. What's the name of the rescue... Or what's the rescue code name?
Oh, begins with I, I think.
Nope, Operation Salvor.
Salvor, that was it.
What's the name of the hurricane? Lindsay says, how long have they got to pressurize for?
I want to say 8 hours.
That's the 8 hours.
Yeah.
The sub sinks near what trench?
No, it's not the Mariana Trench. It's the begins with C.
Yeah.
I've forgotten it.
The Cayman Trough.
Cayman Trough, that was it.
Yeah. What is the nickname for Catfish's Fist?
Oh, because I quite like that line. I don't know, Fisto, right? What is it?
The Hammer.
The Hammer.
When Coffee retrieves the notebook out of the sub, what's written on the cover?
Nuclear warheads do not arm.
See, I thought you'd get this. Crypto.
Of course it is, yeah, with a C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which character occasionally wears a cowboy hat?
One Night.
One Night. What is the actual fluid's proper name that they breathe?
Oh, fucking hell. It's technical terms like that. I can't remember. Like, without... I might make a note of it, but I can't... Without memorizing it, no.
Oxygenated fluorocarbon emulsion.
Of course it was. I mean, that flows.
It just flows right off the tongue,
doesn't it? Yeah, that's it.
Lindsay bangs on Coffee's door with what?
I bet she does. With a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, and what is stuck to the window in the room where Lindsay is developing the photographs? This was a massive 80s thing.
Garfield.
A Garfield, yeah. Which wire does he have to cut?
The black and yellow.
Blue with white stripe. Lindsay invested how long in the project and how long in the marriage?
I want to go 3 and 2, like 3 years in the project, 2 in the marriage, or 4 and 3. But I think
that's
3 and 2.
4 and 3.
Yeah.
So there are 192 warheads on the sub. What's it the equivalent of?
I don't know, one of your Monday morning poos? I mean...
quite possibly. the answer they gave was 5 Hiroshimas.
Okay.
So yeah, that's my extras. Extra questions.
A lot of my extras were in with yours, so yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I think the only one I didn't have was what colour jumpsuit was Lindsay wearing when she arrived?
Blue.
No.
When she arrived?
No, when she arrived onto the rig. Jumpsuit.
Oh, orange.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. There we go.
Nice. Okay, then. So that's the quiz. And at the end of which...
Oh, well, I believe you won.
Did I win that one?
So that
that's pretty cool.
That genuinely means I would have to win the next 5 and then go to sudden death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if you put in the work, it...
Put in the work.
While.
Whatever.
What a bitch. Unbelievable. Anyway, that's, I guess, last orders at the bar.
Last orders at the bar, please. Last orders at the bar.
So, yes, we got to last orders. And I guess, as a sum up, again, it's an even numbered episode, so I get to go first.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, this film is... It's a bit of an enigma, really. As I say, there are bits of it I absolutely fucking adored.
Mm-hmm.
There are bits that are done so fucking well. The tension, the claustrophobia is, in places, it's off the scale. But then there are other things, the clunky dialogue, some of the characterization, the changing characterization between scenes, just doesn't ring true. It's, again, I find it quite slow in places, even though you're straight into the film. There's no hanging about. It sort of grinds to a halt every now and then. It's a bit of a mess for me. Is it a disaster movie? Is it a Cold War movie? Is it an alien thing? Is it a love story? Is it a fairy tale? I'm not sure what it was trying to be. But again, just some bits were really good. The oil workers are cliched, but I really liked them. There's a lot of James Cameron's tropes in there. There's a lot of things that are signalling what he's going to do in the future. Mm. I mean, 40% of it is filmed underwater. That's fucking amazing.
I think that's the first time you've called him James Cameron.
Sorry, James Macaroon.
Right, okay.
But going back to the whole HPNS thing, that's just dumped, isn't it? When they're depressurizing or pressurizing.
Oh, yeah, and
that's going to come back, isn't it?
It's when he suddenly says about it, he's like, that stands for...
Yeah.
Fucking hell,
it's
right.
A bit ham-fisted. So it's a bit... I don't know. Some of the model work, the miniature work is amazing. Some of it is pretty naff. As a whole, I think the film is very good. It's just not what I'd expect from a James Macaroon film. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the score I'm going to give it, although, to be fair, I will go back and watch again. And I, too, am quite intrigued to watch the cut with the extra stuff at the end. Mm-hmm. Just to see if that improves
it. Yeah, whether it becomes more cohesive.
Even though it's nearly fucking 3 hours long. So, yeah, but again, I can only judge it on the theatrical release or the cinematic release because I didn't watch in a theatre. So I'm going to give it... Tell me I'm wrong. Why do they say in a theatre? A theatre is a... Anyway, I'm going to give it... I had a score in my head earlier. Mm. I think that might be a bit too harsh, but I'm going to give it a 6.
Okay. I've got the same. I had a score in my head earlier, and what I tend to do is when I'm doing show notes, whatever else, I will go onto IMDb and mm-hmm. I will rate it.
Right.
And I'm always interested in how my rating will change, because when we talk about stuff, you kind of go, oh, yeah. And it does bring up you know, thoughts about the film that when you get caught up in the moment, it's the Phantom Menace syndrome. So... when I went to watch Star Wars The Phantom Menace, I walked out going, fucking brilliant film. In hindsight, you kind of go, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not. And I think I might have had it a little bit when I watched this film. I was like, uh-huh. And I had this score in mind. You're right. It isn't without its fault. And also, I mean, I know that's an overused phrase. It did have pacing issues. Wonderfully shot, though. And I'm I'm such a James Cameron fanboy. Mm. I will go and watch anything he puts out. I'm so excited for later this year to go and watch the next Avatar. I think he does improve with time. I think he hit gold with Terminator. And I think he just got better than, obviously he did this, then Terminator 2, onto Titanic. And he just seems to get better and mm-hmm. learn.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot of stuff here that lays the groundwork for what it's... Anyway, I'm chatting shit. So, did I enjoy That's it? Yeah, I really did enjoy it, right? I had a good time with it, and I walked away with a smile, and I was like, do you know what, this is good. It's a film that I would not have watched apart from this podcast. Again, I wouldn't have watched it again. It's not, you don't instantly go, let's go and watch 1989's The Abyss.
Although Cez would, she fucking adores it.
The next time I want to watch this is when they've released a Blu-ray, because mm-hmm. I think... Yeah, I don't know about your version, but it just didn't seem crisp enough for me. As in,
bizarrely, I've downloaded a 4K version.
Right,
so I don't know who has who's done that. Maybe it's a fan thing,
right?
But it's beautifully crisp.
See, mine was a bit fuzzy.
Right,
so I really would like to see it in Blu-ray quality with all the stuff added with all the extras. Anyway, on to my score. When I initially rated it on IMDb today, I gave it an 8 because, I think, again, it's solid. It deserves a couple of points knocked off because of, pacing issues and characterization. But in reflection and discussing it, I think I'm going to drop it to a 7.
Okay.
And I think that's fair. I think 7 out of 10 is a fair score for this film for me. So in total, that gives us 13 for
13 out of 20.
13 out of 20 for The Abyss.
Yeah, that's yeah, I think that's a fair score.
It was a long way of getting there, but absolutely, we got there, sorry.
It's not like that's a waffle. Jesus. Well, there we go. That's our score. What's that? 65%?
Let
us know what you think. Do you adore this film? Have you seen this film?
Do you like the director's cut? Do you like the theatrical cut? You know what?
Do you hate it? I can't imagine anyone hate it.
No, because it's not a terrible film at all.
Not in the slightest. I just think it's it just doesn't really know what it wants to be. For me.
If you watch it after Super Snooper, then you're going to go, wow.
Super Snooper! So, yeah, let us know what you think. Well, just let us know anything. It's been nice to hear from people recently. We've had lots of feedback and lots of emails. We've got none of them to hand now, obviously, because we're pissed. Please get in touch. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to hear in the podcast.
Yeah, genuinely, even if you've got in touch in the past, get in touch again. Let us know you're doing all right and say hello.
Exactly. It's always nice to hear from people. We've got lots of plans for the future.
Yes, we do.
We're not going anywhere yet, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Apart from Rewind in a few weeks.
Apart from Rewind. get in touch. Just fuck it, just get in touch. Anyway, shall we? I guess that's last orders. Or we've done last orders. Can't remember. Fuck it. Let's find out what we're doing next.
All right. So, next week's film. All right. We're moving to a bit of a different sort of genre because we've had a couple of weeks of aliens and things like that. So, the tagline for next week's film is a man's tradition that every woman should know about.
Schwanking.
is that a tradition?
Tell me you haven't.
No, I definitely haven't.
Fuck off.
Anyway, another tagline. He will get married in the morning if he makes it through the night.
That sounds quite ominous.
Yeah. Shocking, shameful, sinful, wicked, and the party hasn't even started.
Ooh, nice. That sounds like some boobies. I like boobies.
So if you want to find out what that is, then please keep an eye on our socials and on our website and things like that. And we'll make sure that you know what that film is when you listen to it next week.
What are you talking
I'm
about?
I'm still reeling about kind of going schwanking. Do you actually shit and wank at the same time?
Oh, what? Is that what it means?
Yes.
Oh, my word. I don't know.
Right, okay. as Dara says, always please get in touch and let us know what you think. So, anything else, Daz?
Fuck off.
All right, you fuck off. Until next time, then, I've been Matt.
And I am Darren.
Cheers!